Welcome to Eye on the Illini. Tonight is the endless quest for respect. And tonight's guest is Larry Smith, obviously another one of the Illini guys. I'm Mike Kegley, the co-founder of Illini Guys. Larry Smith is one of the other co-founders. And we are going to talk about some of the ups and downs of being an Illini fan and some of the times that Illinois has not gotten the benefit of the doubt from the organization of the NCAA, from places like referees in the middle of a big game, and of various other things that if you start looking at through the history, it seems like the Illini are always trying to prove that they belong. So Larry, you wrote a fantastic article that I expect will turn some eyes, particularly with folks who are in the media. As a former person who's been on CNN, on NBA TV, you've covered numerous Final Fours. Where did the idea for this come from?
You know, where it first started for me for this particular piece was when I watched the Indiana game earlier this month, back on February 2nd. And just if you're an observer, and let me go back a little bit of background. You know, one thing I've done later on here in life the past 6-7 years is I've been a play-by-play guy and color commentator for the Georgia High School State Football Championships down in Atlanta. And with the Georgia Public Broadcasting people who are fantastic, they're so talented. And it's been a great honor to do that and be able to tell these kids' stories and understand that these kids are going to keep this stuff on tape forever because it's such a big deal in their lives. And so I'm part of all those meetings in terms of not just the stuff I've done in studio with CNN and NBA TV and MLB on TBS and different things I've done. This is a different entity when you get into live programming. And when you're setting up ahead of time, a day or two in advance, sometimes further, you're setting up in terms of what the storylines are going to be and how you're going to present this. And so what I was stunned when I turned the TV on is you've got one team that's the Illini, number 12 in the country and in second place in the Big Ten. They're at a team, Indiana, with the great storied history and the five banners there at Assembly Hall. But they haven't won one since 1987. They've got a losing record in the Big Ten, and they're really struggling right now for their NCAA lives. And yet, if you just sat back and watched every single pre-produced segment, little sidebar segment to kind of, you know, set the game up, was about Indiana and Trace Jackson Davis, who's a fantastic player. But we never talked about what Io had done and what Kofi had done and the fact they were in second place and they had just had this massive win over Iowa that kind of catapulted them into second place by themselves as like the, you know, okay, they were a serious contender to Michigan. And so that's kind of where it started. And then over the weekend, after Io had a second triple double, I couldn't find a single story about it. Anyway,
yeah, I was shocked. I get several newsletters that I kind of look at just to see what's going on in sports. And Io had his second triple-double. He did it in, you know, 14 days or something around there roughly. For two people to do it in Illinois history took from 1906 to the early 2000s. And then to have somebody do two, to be the first person ever to double it up, took 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks. That was pretty amazing, yet nothing. Crickets.
Nothing. Yeah, nothing at all. And what really, I'd already decided to do this piece. That was when I just said, you know, the Indiana thing was one, kind of led into it. You and I talked about it before. We discussed it there on Illini Guys in our game room that we have during live games, what we go into, which is just a great atmosphere. Anyone who's not a part of the Illini Guys, I think that's kind of worth the price of admission right there, honestly. And then when I saw on Monday when the finalists came out for the Cousy Award, and Io was on that list as one of the final five, and in his accomplishments, it talked about that he and Magic Johnson were the only players in Big Ten history to have multiple triple-doubles. And I'm sorry, anytime you're in a category by yourself with Magic Johnson, need I say more?
Yep.
And so I think it was, and so once again, I was like, how in the world do I have to, why would I have to wait until, and let the Basketball Hall of Fame tell me, why didn't anybody do a story on this? And so that's where it kind of goes into in terms of, and that's what I mentioned, you would think you have a top five team with two players who are known entities. Io would have been probably a late second round pick had he stayed in. He was a first team All Big Ten player last year. Kolfi, freshman of the year last year, both players coming back. We knew when they came back that Illinois would be a top 10 team. We didn't know how good they would be, but they'd had their best team in quite a while, and they would have made the tournament last year. We know they'll make the tournament this year. It just surprises me that I just feel like if you take the Illinois name off the chest and put Duke on there or North Carolina, it would be everywhere. I mean, it might be on the nightly news, you know, that guess what? You know, North Carolina Tar Heel is, you know, evoking, you know, memories of Michael Jordan 40 years ago. Look at what he did. It was stunning that nobody picked up and did even just a small snippet on him joining Magic Johnson or just having two triple doubles in a month. As I mentioned in the piece, you know, if a baseball player, Major League Baseball player hits for the cycle, that's huge news automatically. Getting a triple double in college, it's kind of the equivalent. It's pretty hard to do.
Yeah. And the other thing I think is interesting is what you talk about. If you do something in baseball that you tie your name to Babe Ruth or Willie Mays, immediately that makes it something that's worth notoriety. And I got to be honest with you, when you talk about, you know, a good or a great basketball player in college, as much as it pains me because he went to Michigan State, I don't know that I've seen a better college basketball player than Magic Johnson. And so if you can even be remotely in that category, it would seem to be something that you want to bring up as a network when you're trying to produce engaging information so that viewers don't go somewhere else while they're watching your game.
I agree. And it may have been on a highlight show. I didn't watch SportsCenter that night. I don't, you know, like a lot of people now, I kind of get my highlights on my phone or my iPad, et cetera. It could have been on there, but I doubt it because had it been on ESPN TV, it would have been on ESPN.com. And as I mentioned, there was no change to the list of headlines in the right side of the page on ESPN.com on their college basketball front page. There was no change. It was as if there were no games played. The same stories were there Sunday morning that were there Friday night. So I don't know if the guy is supposed to be there called in sick. You know, I don't know what happened, you know, but overall, I just feel that it goes to I feel bad for the kids, and it goes back to overall and what we've discussed before in our last podcast with the Blue Bloods, that there's a reason that these kids want to go to a Duke or a Kentucky or North Carolina or a Kansas. Those are the four programs that will get attention regardless. I mentioned in the piece that I wrote, there were two stories on CBSSports.com about the Johnson kid who left Duke.
Yeah.
He's not even playing, but there were two stories on there about him. And yet Io has two triple doubles and can't get a mention. So, you know, it hurts all the other programs where they've got to work harder to convince these kids you can come here and still get the attention. Now Io is going to get his attention. I think that, you know, it looks like he will probably be a first team All-American. He should be. He's definitely a candidate for National Player of the Year. Some really good players out there. Luca Garza, obviously, is one of them as a returning POY. And so we'll see if that happens. This year has done well for him. He's likely going to be a first round pick. You know, there are a lot of teams that like him. I don't know what you don't like about him if you're an NBA GM. So this has been a good year for him. But I feel bad for that kind of player to do those kinds of things. It's one thing if you're at a mid-major. I'm just going to use this as an example. As a Ja Morant, who's at a smaller school, and you're not going to be on TV as much. There's no major media outlet anywhere. But Illinois is a major player, top 10 team most of the season, and Chicago pays attention. So it just I find it incredibly difficult to understand why he doesn't get more attention, and especially with that accomplishment.
Well, and to my way of thinking, you know, the media is so hyper-focused on ratings. And Illinois was a ratings juggernaut in 2004, 2005. I guess the two ways you could look at it is, well, we have to see if they still are. Or the second way would be, well, they were. Let's jump on it and see if we can ride this rocket to the top. And it seems, is it the fact that the networks are taking more of a wait and see attitude?
Well, you can't do that because they set the schedule so early. And when you look at Illinois' schedule, they didn't have a Sunday game on the schedule since Maryland, since the middle of January. So they weren't even in the mix for that. When you look at, I've mentioned Michigan is on CBS 3 out of 4 years. That's Juwan Howard. Because you look back in September, October, when those things were set, there's nobody on that team that's a household name that you would go, oh, I really want to go watch Cassius Winston. Or I really want to go, Evan Turner is a great player. I want to see that guy. There were no players that were household names. That's about Juwan Howard. And I get that. What a great story. Fab Five guy, great NBA career, went into coaching, paid his dues. He's going to do a fantastic job up there. Good for him. But that's what that's about. Let's see what Juwan Howard can do. And oh yeah, by the way, they're winning. So it makes for a great storyline. I have no problem with that at all. But it's amazing that, the teams that were preseason at the top of the list, Iowa and Illinois, I think Iowa has, one game, on CBS, and Illinois has none. That's surprising. And especially with Iowa, you can say the same thing with Luca Garza. You got the net, you're returning player of the year. How does he not have more games? And I mentioned CBS because they are the age-old contract with the Big Ten. They are the network for the NCAA tournament, the Big Ten tournament. So that's why I'm mentioning CBS. But I think a lot of this is stuff you pick ahead of time. And that's why I'm surprised, because by October, you knew that Iowa and Kofi were going to come back.
Right. And I go back, I can kind of understand, while it's unfair to Luka and a very fine Iowa basketball team, you know, they don't have a Chicago in terms of a ratings magnet that can really elevate you. But Illinois does, and it has historically, it's done that in the past. The 89 team was unbelievably, popular. And then the 2004-2005 team, I mean, let's face it, D. Brown, was all over the media in just about every format possible. And it did surprise me that if I, maybe this is why I didn't spend my life in media, but I would have thought, well, as successful as Illinois was, I'm going to jump on this thing at the start when I heard they were a top 10 team and, see if we can cash in. But clearly that line of thought wasn't one that was taken.
Yeah. Let me defend the media here a little bit, because the difference with the 2004-2005 team and this year's team is that you had a lead up, that's why Johnny Manziel was so unbelievable as a freshman to win the Heisman, because the Heisman, you need a setup here. Tim Tebow needed Vern Lundquist gushing over the jump pass touchdown against LSU, and as if he was a starter when he just came in and threw a pass. I mean, and nothing against Tim Tebow, but there's a reason that he won as a sophomore, because he was the most hyped backup quarterback in college football history as a freshman. So when he took over, he had the name already. That 2004 team, remember, to this day, it remains the only Illinois team to ever score an upset in NCAA tournament history. They were a 5 seed beating 4 seed Cincinnati, went on the Sweet 16 and lost to Duke, the top seed. So, you can make the argument to defend the media and CBS and the other partners that if you have a tournament last year, if COVID doesn't happen and Illinois reaches the Sweet 16, if they go on a run, they've got that hype and that buildup that's going to be there. And then some things may be different. So I do want to make sure that I'm not totally bashing my brother's in the media for the past 30 plus years. And so I think that would be a fair argument for that.
Okay. So as we look at this, there is a long history that Illini fans can look back to in terms of, decisions that have went against the Illini program or a player in a game or how you have a gate, where you have a game placed, that have been, frustrating for the Illini fan. And for someone who's not really paying attention, somebody who's just a basketball fan, or maybe you're a Duke fan or a Kentucky fan, and the Illini only pop up on your radar every X number of years, you're like, it's just whining and complainers from people who want to be us. But it seems like it's a little more than that. Where do you think when did you first see this? And not that all these moments have to be interconnected as like some sort of vast cosmic conspiracy, but when did you first look at this and say, huh, that's strange?
Yeah, Mike, one thing you may not know about me is if I hadn't chosen a career in the media and if CNN hadn't called at a very young age, I would be a history professor somewhere. So I have a great obsession, love with history. And so what many Illini fans may not realize who are younger fans is that you can make an argument that there are few college basketball programs that have shaped what we know now as the NCAA tournament the way that Illinois basketball has. And it comes down to those things that happened at Illinois that later people went, oh yeah, that wasn't good. You know what? We shouldn't do that again. So let's go back to 1984 when the regional was called the Mideast. It's now the names have changed, but the Mideast regional. And back then, because you were trying to build the tournament, you would have teams could play tournament games on their own court. You don't see Final Fours anymore at College Park, Maryland, or in Lexington, Kentucky. Doesn't happen. And the reason why, there was already a talk in the early 80s about changing this policy, making it more fair. And the straw that broke the camel's back was Illinois as a 2 seed. I think they were 26-5, I think, that year. Don't quote me on that, I'm not sure. Taking on Kentucky, the SEC champion, they're Kentucky. And the winner goes on to Seattle to the Final Four. And there was a play late in the game. You can do a Google search. It's on YouTube. You can watch the entire game from 1984, March of 1984, where Dickie Beal gets a rebound under the Illinois basket. Sorry, it's inbounded after a made shot underneath the Kentucky basket. Runs down the sideline, and when he crosses center court, he's got Bruce Douglas right there, and Doug Altenberger is coming in to trap him. And he travels, and the referee is right there. He drags his pivot foot. There's a travel called. Even the announcers thought so. Bruce Douglas, the star All-Big Ten All-American guard for Illinois, pauses, sees there's no call, and then reaches in, ties him up in a jump ball, but it's called for the foul.
Yes.
It was such an egregious moment. And here's the thing. If you're listening to this and you say these are just two Illinois guys and they're mad about something that happened in 1984, get over it. Here's the thing. Forget about that it was Illinois. Forget about that we're Illinois fans. After that game, the powers that be decided, we cannot have this happen again. We're going to change the rules and make sure that teams can no longer play on their home court or be even play at an arena or on a gym where that team is the host. So even if University of Kentucky is hosting a game in Louisville, if they are the host, they cannot play at that site, which is why that stopped happening the very next year. Rupp Arena, 1985, 8 seed Villanova upsets the top seed Georgetown. That was the final time we had a Final Four at a campus site because of that, and the rule changed. But it goes back to that game. That was the final play, the final piece, the final straw that broke the camel's back and got the rule changed.
And who says that we're still upset about it, aside from a minor fortune spent on counseling? These are moments that for folks who are listening to us, if you're an Illini fan, you're like, oh yeah, I do remember that. And I'll tell you, playing Kentucky and beating them in a NCAA game is a big deal. Beating them at their home is huge. And Illinois did both in every way, but the calls that went down the stretch, and they had the game taken from them, and it was unfortunate.
Yeah, it was too bad. In fact, if you even ask, I've read some articles, Ephraim Winter since then has still said he still hasn't gotten over it. That was 37 years ago. I mean, I've gotten over it, that's fine. But in terms of, is it there? Did it happen? Absolutely. And I think, and you and I, I put stuff in social media and I get called names. I'm like, I'm just putting out a fact. I'm not taking sides. But if person X says this, they said it. It's yes. Not me interpreting what they said. This is what they said. Or if the numbers, and I'm a math guy too, if the numbers say this, then the numbers say that. That's what they say. That's the way it goes. So that's kind of the first thing. And then the second thing NCAA-wise was back in John Gross's, the last time Illinois was in the tournament when they were, I think, a 7 seed taking on 2 seed Miami late in the game. I mentioned in the article, Kenny Kaji knocks the rebound away out of the hands of Nana Egwu out of bounds, and it's called Miami ball. And at the time, you couldn't go back and look at the replay. Even though everybody under the sun who could see this could see it was off Miami, it should have been Illinois ball. So again, they made the change. And after that game, they implemented the rule that summer, from now on, under 2 minutes, you can go to the monitor to determine possession in a play like that, under 2 minutes to go in a ball game. So, you know, you could say Illinois fans are crazy and mad and delusional, but these two things actually happened, and both changed the way that games are called and where games are played in the NCAA tournament.
And there's that long known phenomenon, cause and effect, that one could look at to say, yes, this did happen, and now things have changed for the better. Unfortunately, we've got two cases where the victim of the bad thing happening just happened to be Illinois.
Right.
Is it some cosmic, you know, thing? I don't think so. But boy, you know, it's frustrating when it happens a couple times. For my way of thinking, probably the biggest thing that I would tell you I never got over is the investigation where the NCAA came right out and said, even though we have no proof of the allegations, the fact that there are allegations means there was a lack of institutional control, and we are going to do, you know, X. Illinois goes on probation at a time when there's a lot of rumored names that were going to come to Illinois except for the investigation. We'll never know, because time happened and things were different. So you don't know. You know, there's a lot of names in the mythology, even a few current college coaches that Illinois plays against were both said to be, you know, Illinois players, if it wasn't for that. And regardless of whether that happened or not, I will tell you personally, there was about a 5-year period that after I heard that speech, I didn't watch college basketball. I was just like, you know, if you're going to allow, you know, some teams to do stuff and then other teams not to, and it really, you know, there's all those rumors that it was Digger and Bobby, you know, all upset that they had some hand in there. And obviously you had Bruce Pearl, who's proven his bona fides for being an honest person. you know, it, for me, it's like, if you're going to tolerate this from some people, but not from others, I didn't watch college basketball for 5 years. I just took my own little moratorium. And the Deion Thomas era is the era that I know nothing about. I can tell you encyclopedic knowledge before and after, but that part I just couldn't bear to watch. I was so angry. What was your take on that whole NCAA investigation and how that helped fit as a puzzle piece in what you're talking about of the endless Illini quest for respect?
Yeah, that's certainly part of it. I didn't take it as far as you did. I didn't watch as many games because I was at the beginning of my career, and I was actually living in Knoxville and West Palm Beach. And so I didn't get Illinois games like I used to. One, because they were on probation and weren't ranked and at one point couldn't be on TV. And then when they could, they weren't very good. So it was harder to see more than 2 or 3 games a year. But I do remember Deion and what a great player he was. In November of 1990, when that came down from the NCAA and Chuck Smert, who was the enforcement director, I had just begun my TV career at WICD Channel 15 in Champaign. I was still a student at EIU, and so I would go to class in the mornings and then go there in the afternoons. And you know, that was one where we all were stunned. And I remember the conversations I had that day with our sports staff and with our management, and then later with some people at the U of I, that everyone was stunned, because really the university and the basketball program was being punished for stuff that Mike White did years earlier in the early 80s, and that lack of institutional control. And so the feeling among the administrators and the school president was that, well, you know, what you're saying is that we can't control our coaches, even in basketball. You know, now, am I going to sit here? Am I going to tell you that Illinois was squeaky clean at that time? No, I'm not going to tell you that, because I'm not going to lie to you. But at the same time, to your point, if you've got 17 allegations and you struck out, you whiffed, you're 0 for 17, how do you then reduce scholarships? I believe it was like 15 down to 10. How do you ban them from the tournament for a year? How do you take them off, no off-campus recruiting for a year? So, you know, these are major things that you couldn't prove. And that's what's disappointing when, to your point, there were other programs that were doing things, that were doing illegal things that people knew about and that were just brushed under the rug. So, you know, it didn't hurt my fandom, my traveling and building my career and getting to the point to where I got to CNN. Once I was at CNN 3 years later, at that point, you know, we had all the games on satellite. So that was great. I was sitting, make sure the satellite was called up, and I watched games all the time. I was back in the flow of things. But at that time, Lou was about to leave, and it was at still a down period. He hadn't built it quite back up to where it was before. But I think there's no question. Again, that's another one of those moments where, you know, you see these other things happening. It's like, okay, wait a minute. But we were innocent of the charges, yet we got to go to jail, is kind of, I think, what a lot of Illinois fans felt like. And clearly you were one of them.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And I'll be honest with you, I don't generally, you know, takes, you know, a lot of these things that quote personally, because it is sports. But that one hit me on every level when you could read all the books talking about, you know, and all the different things talking about what coaches were doing, you know, in the SEC and for football. And of course, there's always been a few storied programs in basketball that have had their run-ins, you know, with the NCAA. Obviously, Tark was probably the most famous for that. But, you know, and I would see that, wow, we paid a horrible price. And the thing that made me the maddest about it was, again, I don't doubt that there was some dabbling going on. I'm not a naive sports fan, and I had enough friends. And with my dad working on campus, you got to feel, you know, for some things. But it was really frustrating to see that get taken out, particularly on Lou Henson. And I always felt like he was denied that opportunity, particularly when you see what could have been coming after the 89 team. He was denied that opportunity as an older coach to win an NCAA title or two that would have elevated him up. And he was denied, you know, by somebody who apparently had an axe to grind or was working at the behest of someone else. We'll never know. And I really felt that Coach Henson was a better coach than what he's ever been talked about. And I go back to, if you go back and look in the 80s, you know, Bobby Knight was always thought of as the great defensive coach in the Big Ten. But statistically speaking, there was only one number one, and that was Lou Henson. And I felt like what he did defensively with those Illini teams, without the gimmicky trap defense, without the gimmicky press, just brutal man-to-man defense, was truly amazing. And I really felt like he was finally getting to the culmination where he might win a title or two, and he could go down right off into the sunset. And that was denied him by somebody who probably couldn't dribble a basketball three times consecutively if their life depended on it. And I took it overboard because that's what I do.
Well, let me go the other side too, in terms of Bruce Pearl and the other side of the Deion Thomas equation, of people who don't, may not be familiar with it, younger fans or people who've forgotten. The other piece of that is when you think about, you know, Bruce Pearl, you know, and like, I don't know, what, a 3-4 hour phone conversation with a recruit, which in itself is just excessive. And then later again, the doctor tape that was turned in that allegedly he received $80,000 in a Chevy Blazer. I mean, you know, I wasn't there as part of this. I will tell you that, fandom aside, I find that incredibly hard to believe that happened. And let's just leave it at that. Bruce himself, though, did pay a price. He was a pariah for years and was someone gunning for and would have been in line for a Division I job had that not happened. But nobody would touch him. And that's why he had to go to Division II in Southern Indiana, built that program up into a national championship on that level. And then on to Wisconsin, Milwaukee, and the rest is history, Tennessee. And you know, as you pointed out a moment ago, the fun, innovative things he did there that got him in trouble. You know, you don't lie to two people. You don't lie to the feds or the NCAA, because the NCAA already knew the answer before they asked him the question, and that got him in trouble. And now he's out of it at Auburn. So, but Bruce paid a price as well. And, you know, what he learned from it, I can't speak to that. I've met Bruce, interviewed him, spoken to him. I have nothing against him personally, but we know what he did.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a couple of, three incidents that are fairly program changing, you know, two of them, denying opportunities in the NCAA, but at least the silver lining is making things more fair as we go forward for the tournament, which is the most important thing, to get to make it a fair opportunity for these kids to win it on the actual basketball court. And we talked about the probation. Are there any other times that this quest for respect has reared its head that you've noticed it?
Well, I think that because Indiana, historically is such a strong program, they've overshadowed the Illinois program on a national level. And I think what Tom Izzo has done at Michigan State, for people who don't like Tom, again, I know Tom personally, I like Tom. I understand the angst. I get it from Illinois fans, why you don't like him. I get that. The style of play that he practices and he runs, yeah, not a big fan. I get that too. I understand all that. But I think Michigan State and Tom Izzo have also been another program that, since Indiana has fallen by the wayside, Michigan State comes in. And then now you have Michigan and Juwan Howard's there, and that's a sexy name. And Ohio State was there with all the recruits, when Thad Matta was there. So there's always this program kind of standing in Illinois' way. So it's always taken them longer, it feels like. And the one thing I don't understand is, because you do have a very strong, large alumni base and fandom, I mean, across the country. And I mentioned this in the article, one of the things that Ayo Dosunmu wanted to do when he came to Champaign was put Illinois back on the national map. He's done that regardless of what happens in March. Ayo has done that, and he'll go on and he'll make millions and have a fantastic career, and his legacy will be there, and he'll be in the rafters one day, maybe build a statue outside the arena. But I think that you'll, because of the fruits of his labor, especially these past 2 years, you'll get to the point next year and in years to come when it's like it was back in the Self days and the Weber days. Kruger built it up before he left to go to the Hawks. Self comes in, the cupboard is very full, and they're a top 10 marquee team, and they ride that. And then Weber comes in and does the same thing with Self's guys, and teaches a different brand of basketball, gets through the issue of Self leaving. And like him or not, he's the only coach to take this program to a championship game. So now after that, things went down, and you could argue in terms of the success of that, but I think Illinois gets back to that point after this year, and with the recruiting that Underwood and his staff are doing, I don't get the feeling Underwood leaves. I think he's content to be here and build a champion here. I could be wrong. I don't know him personally. If one of these marquee jobs comes up, but he's a guy, I think, that can see what he can do here. And if he does stay, he's like what Bill Self would have been, but 20 years later, where he's that guy that can take this program to the next level. And there could be a national championship in the next 10 years, if not in the next month.
Yeah, just from a fan standpoint, because I've met Coach Underwood briefly for a few minutes a couple different times. I doubt if he would remember me. I'm just not that memorable. But the persona that he projects versus what Bill Self projects, it seems like he may be not as smooth with the media, but I will tell you from watching a practice, what I was really, really impressed with is the amount of detail with which he coaches guys on small things. There's a certain way, you come off of a pick when you have the ball, and you want to do this, that, or the other thing. And he breaks it down for them. And I think that was something probably that Weber was pretty good at as well. But I think what makes Underwood differentiate from maybe Weber and Gross is that when plan A falls through from a recruiting standpoint, he's got a plan B and a plan C that are good plans as well. And he's able to compensate and get what he needs. And I think that's a long discussion. We could do a podcast as a guy who's been a manager for most of my adult career, how you select and who you hire is many times more important than how well you can coach and train. And it seems to me, if you get the right people with the right mental aspects, if you need toughness to play for you, if you need a level of intelligence, if you need somebody who actually has an attitude – that is focused on team over the individual. And if you're good at finding those people, you can have success. And it seems like Weber struggled once he got past a certain talent level. It was like, well, that guy looks good, or this guy looks good. And early on here, I guess, you know, in Underwood's career, he seems to be able to find, this is a player who will play well in my system and play well for me. And that's what I think sets the Bill Belichicks apart, you know, is he gets those guys that can do what he physically needs them to do for whatever position they play. But he also gets the guys who compete, who want to win over personal accolades. And maybe I'm wrong, but it seems like Underwood has kind of understood what kind of guy he needs. And I think that will help in terms of the Illini getting respect, because you're not going to get it until you win it.
Yeah.
And they need to get to that point where they can go out and win it, which was something that I thought. There was a couple calls that were just horrific in the Michigan State game. But as much as I didn't like those calls, when you go 12 for 30 on layups, when you go 19 for 34 on free throws, you don't really get the right to complain about the refs, because you didn't take care of what you need to get taken care of. And as an AAU coach, sometimes when I complained about the calls during a game, the referees would look at me and say, hey, how about I'll help your guys make free throws and you can be the ref tonight. And there's a point there that is true. But I really felt like the out of bounds call was just, I swear to God, just afraid of Izzo. I don't know what happened. And then the one that I thought was the game changer of the whole game was the hit to Kofi's head, which if you take somebody out of the game at that point, then the game turns into a basketball game versus a Pier 6 brawl. And I like the Illinois odds playing a basketball game. And I hearken back to the one thing that the Big Ten frustrates me on is they really have to figure out, do you want to cater to the coach with the most tenure? Or do you want to cater to a game that the fans want to watch? Because we saw what happened with the NBA ratings when the NBA flushed the Detroit Pistons style of defense down the toilet, and we allowed the athletes and the skilled players like Michael Jordan up to today. When we allowed those people to shine their skills because they were that good and that polished, the ratings go up. And at some point, I'm wondering if the Big Ten will figure that out.
Yeah, I'd like to think so. I want to get back to a point you made about in terms of them calling in, and if you take care of things. The one thing that happened after the Sissoko hit to Colburn's head is that if you notice that the fouls, they were calling fouls when inside when Kofi would get hit. He's getting triple, quadruple team. They were calling fouls, but Kofi didn't make the free throws. And that's one of those that you and I get into another podcast in terms of the white jersey theory. It's something I think fans really need to pay attention to because it's real. Come NCAA tournament time, and you could sit back and you can almost kind of watch this take place in terms of, don't worry about the fouls called at 5 minutes. Worry about the fouls called at the 18-minute mark. And what that does is set the tone for the rest of the way. You know, the game, I thought the game changed there. I thought the big change was Io, who got clobbered and may not have been seeing anything more than stars when he went to the line. The flagrant two was called. Sissoko's kicked out of the game. Io then misses both free throws. They get the ball. He's fouled on the drive. He misses one of those two free throws. So instead of it being getting 4 points out of that and it being a 6-point game, it's a 9-point game. The Spartans come down a layup, and so you don't really gain anything, and the game is kind of lost there. So to me, the Michigan State game, and I wrote this in the recap after the Michigan State game on IlliniGuys.com. It's been 26 years since an NCAA team ran the table in February and March all the way to the title. 1995 UCLA. Again, I'm a historian. So this Illinois team was not going to run, because if they did that, if Illinois went from the Ohio State game all the way to cutting down the nets in Indianapolis, that's 21 straight games. That wasn't going to happen. Now, they may lose another game along the way. So that's one I think you chalk up as you didn't have it on this night, but you learn from it. And one thing this team has done that we haven't seen from recent Illini teams is that they do learn from what happened last time. So, you know, that's what I'm kind of hanging my hat on, that you've got a Nebraska team that played you tough a couple of weeks ago. Let's go out and not stumble. Let's go out and play a full 40 minutes. Quick turnaround then to go to Wisconsin. Tough place to play. You manhandle them, but it's up at their place. Get back on track the way you were before, and make sure you come out 40 minutes and play your style of basketball. If Illinois can play their basketball, and something else too that you've talked about in terms of the athletes, let me say this: if Illinois can play their basketball, they are as tough and out in the tournament as any of the perceived top four seeds right now: Gonzaga, Baylor, Michigan, and Ohio State. They're a team that nobody wants to play, as we've seen with Michigan a couple of weeks ago. Getting back to Underwood, look at the athleticism that we now have. I was trying to count as you were talking just now, and I lost count of how many Illini have dunked a basketball this year. You know, we went years. We would go weeks and months without seeing an Illini dunk a basketball in a game. And now you'll see, you know, four or five guys dunk, or Kofi did it 7-8 times in one game, you know. So the athleticism is there, to your point. The basketball IQ is there. And that's what I think makes this team fun, and I think gives Illini fans some excitement for what's to come with some of the guys that he's going to be bringing in even next year.
Well, I think this is definitely the run for respect. I have to be honest with you, when we did our Illini guys, how do they close the season out? I was the only one who picked Michigan State as a loss. And it comes from the fact that I get tired of, it seems like Illini fans like to tempt fate by saying, oh, Tom Izzo, he's done. He's over with. This is it. And that guy has more lives than a cat. But I do think that it is going to be an incredible feat to get through the next four games without another loss. And so while I want them to go 4-0, I don't think it changes them as a threat to the national title if they go 2-2. I'll be disappointed, but I don't think that changes them as a threat. What we need to see is a game where, and I don't think anybody can beat them if they can pull this off, but if you have a game where Kofi, Io, Frazier, and Curbelo are all playing, I'm not certain there's a team in the country. You know, last night we got 12 in the second half out of Curbelo. We got 22 out of Frazier. Io had a rough game, but still 17-9. That would be one of my better games. And Kofi, 13-6 for him is horrible. But across the nation, what you're getting out of centers, that's not a horrific night. But if those guys are all four clicking, they're going to be tough to beat. And I would like to see them, like you said, earn that respect by going out there, and they have my permission to win one more game than the 04-05 team.
Yeah. And keep this in mind, even the Michigan State loss is still a quad one loss. So their tournament resume doesn't hurt them at all. The concern is if you do lose a couple more games and you don't win the Big Ten tournament, do you fall to a 3 or 4 seed? That's my concern if you lose too many games, because then you're letting Michigan or Ohio State in. They're already ahead of you in the pecking order, so to speak. Villanova comes back into play. Alabama comes back into play. Virginia could make a run of the ACC. So you've got enough teams there, Iowa, that could kind of fill up that two line and leave you on the outside where you're now the underdog, and you're playing a six seed instead of a seven seed in round two. So, but I agree with you. I think that regardless, even last year, Illinois wasn't going to be at best. They would have been a five seed last year. Let's say they make a decent run of the tournament. I think I had them at a six seed going into the Big Ten tournament. Let's say they're a five. They're still a really dangerous five last year. And I think the same with this year. I don't care if they're seeded first, second, or third.
Yep.
They're a team you don't want to see coming at you in the tournament.
Yep. So as we talk about the road to respect, are there any points that I missed? I think people will want to get over to IlliniGuys.com, take a look at this article, because we're just kind of scratching the surface on it. This goes back and really does a nice job of kind of building – building a case for what Larry is talking about, but is there anything that I missed or that we should talk about that that folks could go take a look at when they come on and read the story?
Yeah, I think there, you know, I do kind of get into explaining some of the reasons for this. Understand the media is different now than it was in 2005. You know, media entities are much more streamlined. There's a lot more reliance on, you know, the electronics of it and the immediacy of news that we didn't have back in 2005. So, you know, when you've got these weekend, you know, media crews working these websites, it's a bare bones crew. And sometimes not very experienced. And this is, again, not at all in any way, shape, or form trying to denigrate anybody's ability or their talents or anything. It's just the way it's changed. It's just the way the media is today. And we can discuss that another time. But I think that's the big thing. And the other thing, too, is the familiarity. You know, one thing that all the big networks have or whatever is that when you talk about the four major programs, those coaches have all been there 10 years or more. You know, I mean, you know, Calipari got there in the fall of 09, but, you know, I mean, Self's been at Kansas since fall of 03, same with Williams, North Carolina, Mike Krzyzewski since the beginning of time. So, you know, these are coaches that, you know, those programs and their support staffs have all been there. And that's one thing I talked about is, you know, I'm sure for Duke, you've got their SID on speed dial and he's got your number locked in and he sees you call, he's going to answer. They probably had to go look up to see if Kent Brown and Derek Burson were still the points of contact for Illinois because the national media hasn't had to call them in so long. So there's a familiarity to it that, again, to close out by defending my media brothers, the Illinois is back on the national stage. And I do believe that that attention we're talking about is coming. But with anything, you need a setup year. They were denied of that last year because it was unfinished business. And so I really do think, even though I do, and I do kind of explain that later on in terms of some of the reasons for that. And that's a lot of the familiarity and people who just knowing who they are. When you look at in terms of the land, one thing we talk about the blue bloods, when you look at the landscape in college basketball, you have a lot of these programs, except for Calipari and Self, with aging coaches. You know, Williams is older. He's closing in at 900 wins. Krzyzewski is older. Boeheim is older. So you're going to have some changes in those programs. There is that opportunity for that program like in Illinois, like Gonzaga, like Texas Tech, like Villanova and Jay Wright, that's going to come in and I think fill that void and be a player on the national scene as a top 10, 15 team for a number of years. Illinois, if Underwood stays, is set up to be one of those in that higher echelon. So for Illinois fans, hang on. I think the attention's coming. I'm just disappointed that it's not here now.
Yeah, totally get it. So thanks for the excellent discussion tonight.
The history lesson.
the funny thing is, though, is context matters. You know, even today on 590, the Fan down in St. Louis, you know, Sebi Savard did a wonderful job of talking about Illini history. And it's important to understand. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's Illinois or Missouri or Michigan, you know, to understand the context with which the teams are operating in today, you need to understand where they came from. And probably too often the players and even the coaches don't really think about that, but the people who are paying the tickets and the boosters, they think about it and they think about it a lot. So it is important. And I was happy that you could kind of talk about some of these things and put some of this stuff into perspective. And to me, there's nothing more, perspective laden than the fact that Io, in a short amount of time, couple weeks, puts up two triple doubles when it was only done twice in 115 years. I mean, that is amazing. It's just, there's just no way to, how do you put that into any more perspective? So I was glad you could put some of the other things into perspective. I know there's a lot of Illini fans as people age, don't really remember that game with Kentucky. And I still remember the anger of going back to high school. And we were all thinking that this was going to be the year that Illinois would make a run at the national title and certainly, you know, make it to the Final Four. And you know, we were just fans. I really can understand how Ephraim Winters isn't over that, because you just don't get those type of moments in your life more than but once. And you know, his one shot at it didn't work out for reasons beyond his control.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's gonna be, and you, when you get a player like that, like you said, you work your whole life, and that should have been the pinnacle. That should have been the moment for them. And yeah, in terms of IO, I mean, again, I'm old school. We talked about this. I mean, I began at CNN back in 1993. Had we had a player from a major conference like that, a top five team, score two triple doubles in 2 weeks, that's at minimum is our play of the day on Sports Tonight, and might even be our lead story. I mean, there was not that much else going on this weekend. But again, that's just the way the media has changed. And that's something that everyone has to adapt to, including myself. It's an era of COVID. You have a fraction of the reporting crew at games that you would during normal times. And so that means you have less content coming out, less eyes actually on that as well. So there are a lot of reasons to it. But, you know, listen, we have some great journalists out there, and I want, you know, you guys tweet at me if you want, but I love all of you. But we could have done better with IO.
Yep. So perfect. Well, thank you for taking time to come on. I know that you're doing an awful lot of stuff, and to take time in the evening to talk with us is fantastic. Let me do a couple things here before we sign off, though. Remember, IlliniGuys.com is where you can subscribe to get the best news on the Illini. You can get an Illini site that's been designed and run by Illini fans for Illini fans. We have two contests that are going to be, one's closing and another one's just about to start. If you subscribe this week, you can have a chance to win a free 3-night stay at a resort in Maui, and you'll be set up perfectly to take it, to put your picks in and see if you can bust the bracket in the $1,000 Illini Guys Bracket Buster contest that's going to be coming. So this is the week to join, because you might get that opportunity to have that stay at a Maui resort. That would be awfully nice. So I want to underscore that for everybody. Also want to let people know that Brad Sturdy, another of the Illini Guy co-founders, he is going to be on 590 The Fan in St. Louis at 12:30 Friday afternoon. So he'll be on with Sevy as well. I'm telling you that if you don't listen to Sturdy for 30, that's Brad's podcast, you're missing out. There are very few people who've covered the Illini as long as Brad, who've done it as well as Brad, and who really get the perspective of the coaches as Brad. If you want to see somebody who knows how to coach, take a look at what he's done in his time as a coach, and take a look at the players that he's developed in both softball and basketball. It's pretty impressive. So don't miss that coming up on Friday. And of course, with IlliniGuys.com, you also have Eye on the Illini. That's the podcast that is typically more Larry and I tend to be on there. We're going to have one coming out this weekend that's going to be bracketology. We're going to get you all ready for the final week of the season, what the implications are, what's at risk, what opportunities are out there. You'll really want to make sure that you tune into that one. And we will have the full staff of Illini Guys folks here. You won't hear me do much more other than moderate, because these people really know their stuff. So don't miss that. And then the last thing is, be looking out for Eye on the Lines. That's the IlliniGuys.com podcast that talks about some of the fun and the frolic that you can have with the opportunity if you were to gamble. Now, we're not telling you to gamble, nor are we giving you recommendations. But for those who are interested in the subject, Brandon Wildman has an excellent podcast, and usually it's out there right before the weekend, which is great food for thought. So with that, I'm Illini Guy Mike, and I'm going to throw it to Illini Guy Larry to close out the show.
All right, man. Well said. You know what? We're having so much fun doing this. IlliniGuys.com. As Mike mentioned, we've done this, building this for Illini fans by Illini fans, and we really appreciate everybody's support so far. Hey, have a great one. And until next time, ILL.
I-N-I.